You are listening to KGNU Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, July 20th. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, Denver Homeless Out Loud has released the results of a survey of those affected by police sweeps. We'll get the details from an organizer. Boulder City Council has a packed agenda tonight. We'll get a preview from journalist Shay Castle. And we'll play our weekly comment line, comments from listeners who share their thoughts about what they hear on KGNU. How on Earth is taking a break this week? Instead, we'll hear the latest edition of BBC's Science in Action. At 9 a.m., it's the wit and wisdom of Alan Watts, the British philosopher, writer, and speaker known for interpreting Eastern religious ideas for a Western audience. Then at 9:30, the morning sound alternative. 2.5 hours of eclectic music until noon. But first, it's time for local and regional headlines with Stacey Johnson.
Data from the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment indicates just over 95% of the nearly 10,000 people with COVID-19 who have been hospitalized since mid-January were unvaccinated. According to the Denver Post, the health department's data also shows just over 78% of those who have died from COVID since April 1st had not received any of the three vaccines. The state's hospitalization data that has been released is for the period of January 15th to July 10th. Colorado Congressman Joe Neguse will hold a hearing this afternoon before the subcommittee he chairs to discuss his proposal for a 21st Century Climate Conservation Corps. As chair of the U.S. Subcommittee on National Parks, Forests, and Public Lands, Congressman Neguse is proposing a Climate Conservation Corps following the example of the Civilian Conservation Corps that existed under President Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal program. According to the congressman's press release, the proposal will aid in COVID-19 economic recovery by hiring and training new workers who will support forest management, wildland fire suppression, and wildfire recovery with major investments in wildfire resiliency, mitigation, and adaptation programs that have been previously benefited Colorado's wildfire suppression efforts, such as the Collaborative Forest Landscape Restoration Program, and FireWise. Neguse's plan will additionally support the state's outdoor recreation industry and address outdoor access by investing in the Outdoor Recreation Legacy Program and Every Kid Outdoors Program. Yesterday, like on every third Monday in July, Denver City Council elected its new leadership. Councilwoman Stacey Gilmore was elected for a second term as City Council President by an unanimous vote. Councilwoman Jamie Torres was also elected as President Pro Tem. The councilwomen are serving a second term in their roles. Denver's main public library has reopened for the first time since the start of the pandemic. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
The Denver Public Library's main location, the Central Library, reopened last Sunday on a limited basis for the first time since it closed during the pandemic. During the closure, construction supported by the Elevate Denver Bond Program started on the first phases of a major renovation of the building. Due to the construction, Central Library will open with limited first-floor-only access to the public. It will also offer limited access to the Western history and genealogy resources. The renovation includes floors 1 through 4, along with exterior work surrounding the building. The last major renovation Central Library underwent was completed in 1995. In November 2017, Denver voters approved Elevate Denver Bond, Measure 2E, which provided $70 million to renovate the Central Library and 10 branch libraries. Construction is expected to continue into 2022. In other area libraries, the Louisville and Lafayette public libraries are open, with the Longmont Public Library reopening yesterday. In Boulder, the main library and the Meadows Branch Library are now open, but the Noble Corner Library, George Reynolds Branch Library, and Carnegie Library for Local History remain closed. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Today marks the 9th anniversary of the Aurora Theater shooting. Last evening, the 720 Memorial Foundation hosted a midnight candlelight vigil at the Aurora Waterwise Garden in remembrance of the 13 victims who died. And weather today, we're looking at a high of 93 and a low of 65. Patchy smoke is in the air, so sensitive individuals may want to limit outdoor activities. Right now, outside our Boulder studios, it's 63 degrees. For KGNU, this is Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Denver Homeless Out Loud, an advocacy organization for the city's unhoused population, has released the results of a survey on police sweeps conducted during the pandemic in the Mile High City. An estimated 6,000 people sleep outside on any given night in Colorado's largest city. 150 people participated in the survey. Nearly 90% of those surveyed had personally experienced a sweep. For more on the findings, I spoke with Benjamin Dunning, organizer with Denver Homeless Out Loud.
The survey was done kind of at the height of the shutdown during the pandemic, in which the city had curtailed the sweeps that they were doing. Yet the survey reports that 89% of those who responded to the survey had gotten caught up in a sweep. Most people were swept more than once. The average is 3.5 times. And remember, this is during a survey where the number of sweeps the city was doing because everybody was scared at the beginning of the pandemic. You know, they had slowed down on all of that.
The city has made a big to-do, or at least of giving its moral backing, to recent attempts to designate safe camping spaces in parking lots. Is this something that you feel is viable, or is the city just kind of...
It's very viable, but we need more than two. We need 50 in order to meet the need of people who need a space like that. I mean, we're talking several thousand people out on the streets, and the two sanctioned camps that exist by temporary zoning variances, which means they only get to exist for 6 months at whatever location that they're at. That means thousands and thousands of other people can't get into the legal spot, you know, so they don't have any other options.
And with the moratorium on eviction set to expire at the end of this month, what do you feel are the likelihoods of sweeps becoming more common, or at least the homelessness issue becoming more acute?
What we're seeing as far as people stuck out on the streets with no place to go in tents, this is a fraction of what's out there. This time last summer, it was being reported in the news that there were 100,000 evictions that were waiting to be processed. So if 90% of those people find other options, that means there will be another 10,000 people in the city and county of Denver that would wind up out on the street, which would more than double what's out there already, pretty much overnight. So that'll give you an idea of the scale. And that's just the city and county of Denver. They had reporting at the same time that there was 300,000 to 400,000 statewide, and I would imagine a majority of those would be in the Denver metro area. So that's what we're looking at. It's a bit daunting. And if our only response to people needing a place to go is to steal their belongings, throw it away, and tell them to go away, we're going to have problems negotiating it unless we choose some different kinds of policies in order to get through the housing crisis.
And if you were given immediate discretion over a city budget to tackle this problem, what would you do?
Well, first off, we'd build public housing and have the city own it. It's against code in Denver for the city of Denver to own public housing. A lot of problems that people experience in addition to just being homeless out on the street go away once they're housed. You get a full night's sleep and you're safe, and a lot of issues just take care of themselves when you have a safe place to rest. And so the expenses for all this other stuff goes down in the process. Every study that's been done says it's cheaper just to put people into housing than to try to do all this other poop-jumping stuff.
You've made it clear that the problem is far beyond the scale of the city's response to it. Right now, who is doing things right, and how are they doing it?
Well, for example, the tiny home villages with the Colorado Village Collaborative, that is a different form of housing that costs next to nothing, but the city doesn't you know, allow them to exist anywhere. It seems like the city is more interested in protecting land from being developed for people of low means, for budget housing, for affordable housing, for public housing. Those are all different kinds of housing. But the city does everything its way to block that and promote luxury housing. So until the city changes its policy about what kinds of projects are built, this is going to continue to get worse. It was reported in 2019, and I haven't seen an update, but I'm sure it's pretty similar, is that in Denver, 87% of the people who rent in Denver make $35,000 a year or less. So if your housing development doesn't look like that, whatever's going on is just going to get worse. I mean, if you're building for people who earn $100,000 or more, but, you know, the people who need it make $35,000 or less, well, you get tents on the street everywhere.
Again, that was Benjamin Dunning of Denver Homeless Out Loud. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Boulder's City Council has a packed agenda at its regularly scheduled meeting tonight. Joining me for a preview is Shay Castle of Boulder Beat News. Good morning, Shay.
Good morning.
So one of the items on the agenda is the annexation of CU South. We've actually gotten a few listener emails about this. Can you break it all down for us?
Well, I don't know if I can break it all down since this is a process that's been going on for like 20 years, but I can certainly get the highlights. So this week, Planning Board is having its public hearing and vote. They will make a recommendation to council as to whether or not to approve this annexation. The annexation is 308 acres of land that is owned by the university. The university is going to provide 80 free acres of land to the city so that the city can build flood mitigation there, a dam, detention, and flood wall that will prevent the kind of overtopping of 36 that we saw in the 2013 floods. And in exchange for providing that land, which will be for flood mitigation and open space, basically CU gets the right to develop its land. So it needs water and sewer services that will be provided by the city once the land becomes part of the city of Boulder. So that's at its core the main kind of trade-off that we're talking about here. The city gets to do flood mitigation for land that is free, and CU gets the ability to develop a southern campus there.
Also on the agenda is a measure to ban tents from public parks. This is obviously targeting the unhoused population. What's been the discussion leading up to this?
This came out of the discussions earlier this year and last year about removing encampments of unhoused people, which obviously grew during the pandemic, which was a time of, you know, mass economic upheaval for a lot of people. And amid growing national homelessness, you know, that has grown every year for the past 4 years in America, and the number of unsheltered people in America now outnumbers the number of people who are unhoused but living in shelter. And Boulder's no exception. So Boulder's current camping ban, which is really what prevents unsheltered people from living in public places, it really only is in effect at night. It's not currently illegal to set up a tent. The way the camping ban works is it makes illegal any quote unquote activities of daily living. So basically you have to have proof that someone is living there, not just setting up a tent and sleeping, which is technically not illegal during the day. So the city has argued that this makes it harder to remove encampments before they get, to use their word, entrenched. And so by banning all tents and structures of dwelling on public land, they basically could ask people to remove tents as soon as they're set up. They don't have to wait and see if people are living in them and staying overnight. So it makes it harder for unsheltered people to live in public places and easier for the city to prevent them from doing so.
What options do unhoused people have for not sleeping outdoors at this point? Like, what level of infrastructure does Boulder have to provide shelter?
Boulder is an interesting place because it does a lot of things really well and then a lot of things really poorly with homelessness. So they kind of are shooting themselves in the foot. What Boulder does really well is housing people. We house a lot of people here but what we do poorly is everything in between homelessness and housing. We do have a shelter here. The Boulder Shelter for the Homeless is pretty much the repository for most unhoused people. There are specific providers for specific populations, such as transgender, non-binary, and female identifying people. And then youths have their own services, and veterans have some of theirs. And the city has argued that because we have empty beds at shelters every night, that there is enough capacity. However, there are 100 plus people living unsheltered every day who are either cannot access these services or choose not to for a variety of reasons, such as mental health or pets, or maybe they want to stay with their partner, which they can't do in shelter. And if you have been in the community for less than 6 months, there is no option for you. Boulder is maybe the only place in America, certainly the only place I've come across, that has this rule that bans you from all services. If you've been here less than 6 months, they will buy you a ticket out of town. And that's basically it, which doesn't seem to be that effective. So the answer is, what is there? Depending on who you ask, there's a lot. Depending on who you ask, there's not enough. I think just the fact that there are still so many unsheltered people would speak to the fact that the system is working well for some people, but not all.
Anything else that we should be watching closely with this upcoming city council meeting?
Well, we're doing a first reading of all the ballot content, which will be interesting, specifically because there's a measure regarding CU South's annexation that will be on the ballot if the group doesn't pull that, which will be interesting because annexation may already have happened by then. And the city has said that this means the ballot measure will be pretty useless and irrelevant. So that's interesting. There will be an update on the city attorney recruitment tonight, which is something we've been watching for a few months. There's actually quite a lot on this agenda. There's an update on the Boulder Res, which has been an issue of contention recently, the decision to allow a restaurant there and some events by nonprofits that were protested by neighbors were canceled. So that's kind of created its own little drama there. So this is a very, very busy meeting. Lots of information. It's going to be a very long one. It's scheduled till 11 p.m., but I guarantee you it will go beyond that.
Shay Castle, founder of Boulder Beat News, thanks as always for the update.
Thanks for having me.
Time now for This Week in Water from H2O Radio.
What the moon's wobble means for coastlines. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
A month's worth of rain fell in 24 hours in parts of Germany. After a storm became stationary over the country last week, Belgium, Switzerland, and the Netherlands were also affected, and at least 180 people have died.
It will take time to analyze what role climate change played in the flooding, but studies have already shown that because warmer air holds more moisture, extreme downpours will increase. The world has already warmed by over 1 degree Celsius since the 1800s.
Haley Fowler at Newcastle University told the New York Times there are some studies that suggest rapid warming in the Arctic is affecting the jet stream, causing high-altitude air currents to weaken and slow down. The combination of more moisture in the atmosphere and stalled storm systems can lead to the type of extreme rains that occurred in Europe last week.
From about the 1920s through the 1970s, PCBs were used in products like televisions, refrigerators, and electrical insulation. The man-made chemicals were banned in 1979 because of their harm to humans and the environment and their accumulation in the food chain.
Two scientists from the UK, Alex Ford and Kate Spencer, are warning that many historic landfills that were built before environmental protections were mandated are ticking time bombs because they contain PCBs and other legacy pollutants that take a long time to break down.
In Europe alone, there are about 10,000 historic landfills adjacent to oceans where climate change, sea level rise, and flooding can cause contaminants to leak.
The researchers say currently many marine mammals have concentrations way above safe thresholds for their immune system and fertility, and there are predictions of declines, if not extinction, of orca populations in the next 30 to 50 years. The scientists call for global action to address the problem.
flooding along coasts could increase dramatically as sea levels rise from global warming. And now NASA scientists have shown that variations in the moon's orbit, called its wobble, will cause high tide flooding in clusters that could last a month or longer.
The lunar wobble is a natural occurrence, first documented over 300 years ago. The moon's orbit is responsible for periods of both higher and lower tides about every 18.6 years.
During half of the cycle, high tides are lower and low tides are higher. During the other half, high tides are higher and low tides are lower.
NASA predicts that in the mid-2030s, higher sea levels will be amplified by the lunar cycle and cause a leap in floods on almost all U.S. coastlines.
Currently, the moon is in the tide amplifying part of its cycle, but sea levels have not risen much, so it's not been a problem. However, it'll be a different story the next time the cycle comes around, when sea levels will have risen for another decade.
A new report out last week reveals that since 2011, the Environmental Protection Agency allowed oil companies to use compounds in their fracking activities that break down into dangerous PFAS chemicals.
The nonprofit Physicians for Social Responsibility was able to obtain internal EPA documents through a FOIA request that showed the agency was concerned about how three chemicals used in drilling could persist in the environment and be toxic to people, mammals, and birds.
The New York Times reports that EPA scientists recommended additional testing on the compounds, but there's no indication tests were ever conducted.
PFAS compounds are known as forever chemicals that take a long time to break down and have been linked to cancer, birth defects, and other serious health conditions.
The chemicals identified by EPA were used in fracking for oil and gas in nearly 1,200 wells across six U.S. states, including Arkansas, Louisiana, Oklahoma, New Mexico, Texas, and Wyoming between 2012 and 2020.
And finally, activists dressed as lobsters, crabs, and squid gathered outside the UK Parliament earlier this month as an animal welfare bill was being debated inside.
The proposed law would recognize that animals feel pain and are sentient beings. On the day of the rally, an amendment was being discussed that would extend the bill's protection to include invertebrates such as crabs, lobsters, and octopuses, something the shellfish-clad campaigners were demanding.
The idea that crustaceans are sentient animals that can feel pain was documented in a report by the Humane Society of the United States in 2008. The study also noted that the animals don't immediately die when slaughtered using common methods.
If the UK law is passed, restaurants and fishmongers would be banned from boiling crabs or lobsters alive or sending them through the mail. Instead, they would have to be stunned or chilled before boiling, which the activists say is a more humane way of cooking the creatures.
That's it for this week in Water. We'll catch you next time.
And now we check in with KGNU's comment line when we hear what's on the minds of listeners.
Hi, Joe Ritchie knocked it out of the park Tuesday. The Hemispheres program. His guest was from Santiago, Chile. The Chile is forming a constitutional convention, and they discussed that. 150 delegates will be elected, or maybe they are elected by now. Half of them women. 17 seats are reserved for the indigenous people. The right-wingers hoped for 30%. They got about 20%. You can go to YouTube and put Chile and Constitutional Convention in the search engine, and you can see a couple of programs about how the people got a Constitutional Convention. There has been nothing about it in the papers yet. And that's very interesting. I wonder why. Okay. Thank you very much.
Hi. My name is Darby, and I'm calling actually to find out if your transmitters are working properly. I normally listen to KGNU on the FM station. I can hardly get that, and when I switch over to the AM station, I can hardly get that as well. and this is new. Normally I can pick up quite easily. I just don't know if it's you or me. Thank you.
A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, call us at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25 during the Morning Magazine. And that's all we have for today's Morning Magazine. Thanks for tuning in. I've been your host, Shannon Young.